We've been traveling. Last week we took some time off, and I had the opportunity to go back to the family farm and visit with my grandparents. And so I was able to take the boys with me, and they were able to see their great-grandpa and great-grandma and spend some time on the farm, enjoying seeing the fuzzy little chickies that had just hatched and play on the tire swing and catch fireflies and light off man-made fireflies. It was a real enjoyable time. And in the evenings or afternoons, we would sit on the porch swing and gently rock back and forth and tell stories, hear stories. And it was interesting to me to be on that same porch where a number of decades previous, let's not get into details, but a number of decades previous, I remember driving up to the same property. We let off my great-grandfather, who was, I'm guessing, in his 80s. And he sprinted across the front lawn. By this age, he was too blind to drive himself safely, except apparently by feel of his bumper, which he sometimes got away with. But this time he was driven back home. He ran out of the car, got to the porch, and to the amazement and shock to some of us in the vehicle, got onto the porch, grabbed a chin-up bar, and skinned the cat. You know that move where you go all the way back and your feet are over your head? And then he got down gently and raced inside the house. So it was neat to be back on that porch, to see that chin-up bar still there. No one attempted the same feat this time. And to sit and just talk. And to hear the roosters crowing in the middle of the afternoon. They don't have watches, so they'll crow whenever. And to see that drive in front of the property. Now, my grandfather, before he moved into this particular house, was familiar with the building because it was the road he would take while walking to and from school. So many years previous, he was familiar with this property. He'd walk in the morning and walk back in the afternoon. And he would walk down the gravel road. It was different then. There wasn't gravel. It was almost bare stone, kind of like the rest of the hills were back in the day when they were known as Bald Knobs. But he would walk down into, it was about a two-mile trek to school each day, to the little village, community, I'm not sure what to call it. It's still on the maps today, called Romance. So he would walk to the road to Romance, get there, and go to school. Now, at the time when he went to school, the community had enough children where the one-room schoolhouse was full, about 80 kids. And that's where they went to school. There was, next door to the school, there was a church. Before the school, there was the general store. And the post office there, when it was still open, got very busy just before the 14th of February for some strange reason. People wanted to have their postmarks from Romance. But it was a busy town in the day. It had, for a time, a tomato cannery. It had, for a time, a grist mill. It also had, for a time, a charcoal-producing plant, which I think maybe burnt down, ironically. No, it didn't. It just got abandoned. But those are gone. Those buildings are long gone, except for the church. It's still there. The schoolhouse has been converted to a residence. My mom actually went to that same one-room schoolhouse. But by the time she went there, the population of the surrounding communities had dwindled so much there were only 12 people in that classroom. So you go from 80 when my grandfather was there all the way down to 12 when my mom was there. And I think shortly thereafter it closed and people had to be then bused to the county seat to go to school. So it was poignant for me to be there and think about the reason we were there for July 4th and to think about the history, the sacrifices that had been made by so many, and to think about what had been that is no longer there, that has somehow been lost. And we took Grandpa and Grandma for a drive after the Sabbath to another little hamlet, another community. And on our way there, we passed through yet another community. And these, similar to Romance, had the old general store, now closed, in disrepair. And it got me thinking about a passage in Jeremiah. Jeremiah 6:16. If you'd turn there, please. Jeremiah 6:16. Jeremiah is giving a warning to the southern kingdom of Judah. outlining to them that things have gone wrong and that they would be facing a similar calamity that the northern kingdom of Israel did. Thus says the Lord, stand in the ways, or stand at the crossroads, and see, and ask for the old paths where the good way is, and walk in it. Then you will find rest for your souls. But they said, we will not walk in it. So what I'd like to do for this split sermon is to review how this passage applies for Western nations today. We'll review how this passage applies to Western nations today. So what I'd like to do is break this up into sections, into chunks, and speak about them. So first I'd like to talk about stand. The word stand here, stand at the crossroads. When people are in wilderness areas, it's important to be prepared not just for the sunny days, but also to prepare for those times when things go awry, when things go wrong. If someone would get hurt, it's important to have a first aid kit. But it's also important to consider the possibility that you might get lost or stranded. And so in those cases, it's important to tell people before you go on a trip where you're going, when to expect you back, so they can anticipate if you're missing, when you were, how long you've been missing, where you were planning to be, but also to have other survival kits available. One of the most important survival kits to take along on any trip is this. No, not my head, but your own head, to think. And there is an acronym that survival guides talk about, S-T-O-P. S-T-O-P. And it stands for, the S in stop stands for stop. I know that doesn't make sense. It's kind of like looking at the two mirrors in the bathroom and kind of goes forever. But the first S stands for stop. The second T is think. O is observe. And P is plan. Stop, think, observe, and plan. So before you get more lost, stop. Don't go any further. If you find yourself in a hole, stop digging. If you're lost, stop getting loster. Stay where you are and get your bearings. Think. Where were you headed? How long will it take before people know that you are missing? Think about surroundings. Observe, is there a storm on the horizon? Is there impending weather? Are there broken bones that need to be mended? What are our initial needs? And then P for plan. Okay, now how do we overcome the initial needs and then start planning for these secondary needs? Here Jeremiah was telling the nation of Judah, stand, or God through Jeremiah rather, saying stand. Where you're going is not the right destination. Stop. Evaluate where you are. And for Western nations today, similarly, stop. Are things going well? Are we happy as a nation? Are we in less or greater need for locks on our front door, on our vehicles? How are we doing? There was a story that I read online about Albert and Rita Chrétien. They were from British Columbia and were making a trip to Las Vegas, and they took their van, a full-size van, and were relying on a GPS unit whose manufacturer will go unnamed. But they relied on this unit to get to where they were going, and unbeknownst to them, the GPS was taking them further and further into the wilderness on logging roads. And they eventually got stuck in the mud all the way up to the axles, and they could not move. They were there 3 days. The battery was dead on the vehicle. They had limited food. Gas was of little use to them because the vehicle was stuck. So Albert then took off on foot. He took the GPS unit with him, and his objective was to get to the nearest town and get help. He never came back. A month later, Mrs. Rita wrote on a piece of cardboard where they were, what their objective was, their address, their son's contact information. She was fearing the worst. She was leaving a note behind for whoever would find the van and what was left of her so they could make the proper contacts. He never came back. It was 6 or 7 weeks later. She subsisted on runoff water, on the little trail mix that was left. She survived that long. And authorities speculate that if she had lasted, or if she had gone unfound much longer, she probably would not have made it. She did make it. She recovered in a hospital. But her husband was not found for, I think, 16 weeks. They finally found his remains. He had gotten lost, was 7 miles from the van, I think it was, and about 6 miles from the next town. But he got disoriented, was actually going uphill in snowdrifts, and he just died from exposure. But it's interesting how, without the proper navigation tools, we can get off track. And as a nation, we can see how we have gotten so far off track. A quote from a news article covering this. This was from CBS News. It says here, a navigator can be a great aid, but you always want to plot it out on a traditional map and make sure you understand the road ahead. In other words, he says, the commenter, don't follow your GPS blindly. And I know I'm guilty of this. I don't have maps much anymore in my vehicle. I don't need a map. They're hard to unfold and almost impossible to fold up again. We'll just rely on GPS. And that's problematic if the GPS has faulty information or if the battery goes dead. So it's important to keep these things in mind. What are we following? Stop. Are you going the right way? The next word I wanted to take a look at was crossroads or ways. Stand at the crossroads. Other translations say stand at the ways. Stand at the ways. It is said almost proudly by politicians now in Western nations that we collectively or singularly are no longer a Christian nation. And that is said, like I said, with pride almost. So what are we? I think it's plain that we're confused. There's so many competing ideas. Various beliefs are followed now, experimented with, to see if it makes sense for them. More relativism is rampant. We were talking with someone in the community just the other day. Very nice person, very giving, very outgoing, kind, seemingly very trustworthy. Every indication as such. And they shared candidly that they didn't think anybody really knew what our purpose was. Nobody really knows what our purpose is, why were we born. And then went on to talk about a relative who had recently been diagnosed with an illness and then subsequently died from it. And their spouse, we're walking through, the spouse, I think, the grandfather and the family, were walking through a parking lot, and there on the pavement was a penny. And the kid picked it up, showed it to the mom, and they all got excited because you know that pennies come from loved ones who are in the beyond, wherever they happen to be. And of course they knew this because the penny was the same year as the gentleman was born, so clearly it's a connection. And it was a great source of comfort to them. It wasn't the time to burst that bubble. But it goes to show how varied the beliefs are of the nation around us, of culture, where there are no absolutes, where people are confused because it could be anything. We're at a crossroads. So stand at the crossroads, or ways. Ways is the same word used in Isaiah chapter 2. Let's take a look at Isaiah chapter 2. Back just one book. So this is the word ways or crossroads. We'll read verses 1 through 3. Verse 1, the word that Isaiah the son of Amos saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem. Verse 2, now it shall come to pass in the latter days that the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established on the top of the mountains and shall be exalted above the hills, and all nations shall flow to it. Many people shall come and say, come and let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of Jacob's God, or to the God of Jacob. He will teach us his ways, and we'll walk in his paths. So that's the same word that is referenced here. Ways. So stand at the crossroads and look. Let's talk about that word look right now. Turn with me, please, to the book of Joshua. Joshua chapter 2. So the children of Israel are getting ready to cross over into the land of Canaan. Before they go, Joshua recruits some spies to scope out the land. Verse 1. Now Joshua, the son of Nun, sent out two men from Acacia Grove to spy secretly, saying, "Go, view the land, especially Jericho." View the land. It's the same word for look or view. So their job was not to go as tourists, take pictures and buy some souvenirs, get a sample of the wall from Jericho. I was at the wall. Their job was to go and critically look, to examine, to spy. It's the same word that is used in this particular passage, at the go to the crossroads and look, view. Growing up, I had access to my dad's Louis L'Amour Library, and really enjoyed his writings. It was hard for me to pick up one of his books, start reading the first chapter, and then put it down. My dad's a very disciplined person. He can read one chapter at bedtime, go through one chapter, put a bookmark in it, and put it down. And I can't do that. The way he writes his stories are so engaging, I have to know what happens next. And before long, it's way too late o'clock. My dad, he's not that way. He's able to stop. Louis L'Amour is so engaging, I cannot do that. In his autobiography, he has this to say, and it may sound familiar to those of you who may read his books or have read his books. He said, "They're out there by the thousands. Wonderful stories. Many have never gotten into the histories, although occasionally told by local newspapers or private printed booklets. Stories of wagon train massacres, stories of buried treasure, of gun battles, cattle roundups, border bandit raids. No matter where you go, east, west, north, south, there are stories. People are forever asking me, where do I get my ideas? One has to only listen, to look, and to live with awareness. As I have said in several of my stories," and this is maybe what you would find familiar, "as I've said in several of my stories, all men look, but so few can see. It is all there waiting patiently for any passerby." So the word look here is not a casual glimpse, but a careful study, a careful spying out, a careful examination. Stand at the crossroads and look. The second phrase we'll look at, ask for the ancient paths. And a word here that we'll focus on is ancient. Ancient. Another place where this is found is in Proverbs 22, verse 28. Let's turn there. Proverbs 22, 28. Proverbs 22, and verse 28. No, not Psalms. Proverbs. "Do not remove the ancient landmark which your fathers have set." The advice is these boundaries are there for a reason. Don't move them. They're good landmarks. They've stood the test of time. They're ancient. Same word. Ask for the ancient paths. It's tough to do in a society that values new fashions each year. Have you seen how much shoes change from year to year? When was the last time you were in a shoe store? For me, it's been a long time. I get scared when I go in there because I'm afraid my feet aren't good enough for those fancy shoes. And they're always changing, aren't they? Somehow running radically changes from one year to the next, where the models of those shoes have to change so much. Now they've got padded insoles or little springs on them, or they have to be made of lighter material because your frame apparently is so weak it would make a huge difference to have a tighter weave. And I hate those new weaves. I want a shoe that's made of leather, the whole thing, so that when I'm out cutting the grass, the branches that I walk past don't cut the mesh and then the shoe starts to fall apart. Does that bother anyone else or just me? Pay so much for a cheap shoe that falls apart so easily. Shoes change. Clothing changes. Fashion changes. Cars change radically from year to year because our needs for a van change so much from one year to the next. Not really. But they do have some neat improvements. Those stow-and-go seats are really cool. Not particularly comfortable to sit in compared to the cushy seats of the old ones, but they do change. Some of the improvements are very good. Some of them are not. But how big are those three letters, N-E-W? And how often are they used in advertising to entice us to change something in our lives? New is so highlighted in our world today. Even phones, they get outdated. Oh, you've got the old version. I've got the new one. You want to see it? New is valued. And so there's a focus. Look for the ancient paths. New is not always good. New is not always an improvement. Ask for the ancient paths. And the next phrase, ask where the good way is. Not every antique is equivalent. Ask for the ancient paths, part one, but part two, ask where the good way is. Some antiques are forgeries, aren't they? Have you ever watched the Antique Roadshow? It's fun to watch. It's exciting to see what treasures people have had in their attic for years they had no idea. And sometimes people have what they think is a treasure and it turns out to be a fake. Well, no, it's still an antique, but it's an antique forgery. And some of those can be old. At our coin club, they were passing around an old note. I think it was what bill was it that had the Indian on it? I think it was that bill. In any event, it was an old note, an old bank note. It had color ink, it had the filigree on it. Clearly it was an old piece of paper. It was not a new reproduction, it was old. And in our club, there's a gentleman who is renowned in the engraving business. He knows his currency. He took one look at it and said, yeah, that's a fake. It marveled me. I said, how do you know it's a fake? He said, well, you just have an eye for these things. I said, the paper's worn, it's creased, the color looks old, the ink looks like it's deteriorating, the brilliance is not there. He said, I can just tell. And some people have what they consider our treasure that has been passed down from one generation to the next. Little did they know that somewhere back in history, someone passed them a forgery. So not all antiques are to be valued. Ask for the ancient paths, yes, but ask where the good way is. As I thought back to the communities on our trip that used to support those old farms that were worked by families from generation to generation, at some point, somehow, that system fell apart. No longer were those farms, able to support families. Somehow it became too expensive. And somehow that all just fell apart, and all that's left is a little sign marker. This is where romance was. Don't give up hope. Romance isn't dead yet. It's just not doing so well. Ask where the good way is. Which is not to say that our history in Western nations has always been good. There have been ugly intolerances that have needed to be removed, despicable institutions. Again, that's part of the ancient paths. They're not always good. Let's take a look at Job 22. Job 22. And we'll read verse 15. So Eliphaz is replying back to Job at this point. In verse 15, he says, will you keep the old way which wicked men have trod? So there are some old ways that wicked men went down. So not every ancient path is the correct path to go. And it harkens back to one of the songs that we sing, the Battle Hymn of the Republic, one of the lines, where the saints have trod, not where wicked men have trod. So that is all part of asking about where the good way is. The way. And you may, if you have time today, examine the book of Acts that talks about the way. Or John talking about the way. Ask where the good way is. Next phrase we'll look at, and walk in it. And walk in it. Walk, or your translation may say follow, which is the way it's translated in 1 Samuel 17. Let's turn there. 1 Samuel 17, we'll read verses 12 through 14. Goliath is in town, taunting the army of Israel. Okay. Now David was the son of that Ephrathite of Bethlehem, Judah, whose name was Jesse, and who had eight sons. And the man was old, advanced in years in the day of Saul. The three oldest sons of Jesse had gone to follow Saul to the battle. And the name of his three sons who went to the battle were Eliab, the firstborn, next to him Abinadab, and the third, Shammah. David was the youngest, and the three oldest followed Saul. Followed. The same word that Jeremiah used for walk, and walk in it. So it's not enough to stop, to evaluate one's position. Are we going the right direction? No, we're not. Okay, well, how do we find the right direction? We have to ask for the ancient paths. There are a lot of ancient paths where the good way is. Ah, there it is. The commentaries will point out the good way being the Sinai covenant, pointing back to Deuteronomy. We found the good way. Now what do we do? Well, walk in it. It's not enough to identify it, but now it has to be followed. It has to be made our own. It has to be part of us. And walk in it. In it, not near it, not close to it, not parallel to it, beside it, but actually in it. I'm bad for this. When we go for a walk in the woods and we're following a trail, nothing irks me more than seeing the sign, please stay on the trail. It bothers me. I'll stay on the trail so I can be a good example for mini-me's. But where there is no sign, I love to go off the trail because I want to know what can you see from that ridge over there where there's no trail. I love to see what's over here down this ravine that you can't quite see from the trail to find out what's there. In doing so close to work, there are a number of trails through the woods. You can find all kinds of neat critters, all kinds of views, vistas, surprises to be found. That's nice for a trail, but that is not wise to do when it comes to finding God's way. Once it is found, we have to walk or follow in it. The next phrase, and you will find rest for your souls. And you will find rest for your souls. The word here, find. Find. Can you find something that hasn't been lost? To be lost before you can find it. You might not know it's been lost. But here it says, and you will find something. Let's take a look at Luke 15. Luke 15, we'll read verses 8 through 10. Luke 15. There are a number of parables here about lost items. Verse 8 through 10 is talking about a coin. Verse 8, or what woman, having 10 silver coins, if she loses one coin, does not light a lamp, sweep the house, and search carefully until she finds it? Verse 9, and when she has found it, she calls her friends and neighbors together, saying, rejoice with me, for I have found the peace which I have lost. Likewise, I say to you, there is joy in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner who repents, who has been found, who has found God's way. Does it remind you a little bit of the story? It does me, so I'm going to tell it to you. Remind you of the story of the lost pocket watch in the ice house. So in the days long ago when there were no refrigerators, electricity, in the wintertime, blocks of ice would be cut, hauled back away from the river to the ice house where they would be packed in sawdust, which was made at the sawmill. The blocks would be packed tightly, covered with canvas. The ice house would be lower, not higher. It would be sealed shut, maybe have earth packed around the walls. But the story goes that in the summertime when they were taking the blocks of ice out of the ice house to be used for ice cream or just to be used to keep things cool, one of the workmen lost their pocket watch. Of course, this is the days before people had three timepieces on them, right? Pocket watch was something passed down from one generation to another. It was a valuable commodity. And so work stopped, and the workmen then were carefully going through the sawdust with brooms and rakes, trying desperately to find this watch, to no avail. So at lunchtime, the dejected workers went off to take their break in the shade, and a boy who was watching all of this and understanding the significance of the watch watched them depart, went inside the ice house, closed the door, and a few minutes later came out with the watch. And of course they asked, how did you find this watch? We spent hours looking for this. How did you find it so quickly? He said, well, it was easy. I went in, saw a little spot over there big enough for me to lie down in. I closed the door, laid down, was still, and was quiet, and I heard it ticking. And so he was able to find the watch. And you will find rest for your souls. It takes work to find something. Rest for your souls. What kind of rest are we looking for that has been lost? Matthew 18, verses 28 through 30. Matthew 11, 28 through 30. This is in a section called Rest for the Weary. Come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Which does not mean it is an easy process. Christian walk is, it takes effort to not do the things that are so easy to do. The reactions that are so easy to take aren't the ones we're supposed to take. Doing that which we're supposed to do is hard to do, yet God asks us to do those things anyways. However, the result is rest for your souls. Aren't you glad you have a day of rest today? I know I'm glad. Or is your to-do list blank? I'm sure your to-do list is as long as anybody else's, all kinds of things to do. And we'd be doing them today, wouldn't we, if it wasn't for the Sabbath. What a gift the rest of the Sabbath is for us. And you will find rest for your souls. The last phrase we'll look at, but you said we will not walk in it. We will not walk in it. Jeremiah was warning the southern kingdom of Judah of what would happen and gave proof 20 miles north. Look what happened to the city. It was sacked, razed. That's what's going to happen to Jerusalem, he warned. They'd seen it happen. They'd seen their northern brother kingdom taken into captivity. And he said, you're next. He warned them, God said they would be next if they didn't change. But you said, we will not walk in it. Is there a nation any different today? prayer is banned. The three-letter word God is thought of in many circles as being a four-letter word. The things you're not allowed to show in the public square, talk about in the public square. We will not walk in it. Which I thought was rather ironic, the tone of society of Western nations today. The United States, Canada, the UK, where you cannot have a Christian discourse. All other religions, yes, you're allowed, but not Christianity. It must strike a nerve with so many that it is frowned upon so much. We will not walk in it, in spite of the warnings, in spite of the example. Judah, too, said, we will not walk in it. And how sad that is. And increasingly we hear this in society or see it in society today. Thankfully, the warnings that Jeremiah gave weren't the end of the story. That he shared God's promise that, yes, punishment will come. It will come swiftly, and it will be very unpleasant, brutal in some cases. But that's not the end of the story. That there was a promise for a returning remnant coming out of captivity. Let's take a look at the book of Micah. Let's see, Micah, Nahum, Habakkuk. Jonah, Micah. Yes, it's still here. Good. We'll read verses 1 through 4. Now it shall come to pass in the latter days that the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established on the top of the mountains and shall be exalted above the hills, and peoples shall flow to it. Many nations shall come and say, come, let us go up to the mountain of the... I can't help it. I'm hearing the song. Are you? Yeah. My poor simple mind can't help but hear the music. Come and let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob. He will teach us his ways. We will walk in his paths. For out of Zion the law shall go forth, and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. Verse 3, he shall judge between many peoples, and rebuke strong nations afar off. They shall beat their swords into plowshares, and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, and neither shall they learn war any more. But everyone shall sit under his vine and under his fig tree, and no one shall make them afraid. For the mouth of the Lord of hosts has spoken. So there is a time coming in this duality of prophecy. A time coming when there will be perhaps a return of family farms like there used to be in this nation. Everyone will sit under his vine and fig tree. Acreages will flourish, and so will the communities that serve those acreages. And then the roads that connect those communities, that tie them together, communities like Romance and others that we see on maps that don't exist much in real life, again, will flourish. And most importantly, the roads that link those communities will lead to the mountain of the Lord.